broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and good evening. Welcome to our program. We are a radio show that is a news talk and entertainment talk show that knows what it's talking about. Every night we are here from, from 10 on the West Coast all the way to 1, from 1 to 4 on the East Coast, and we are a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, and I totally forgot our role out here, bud.
And also the truth.
Yes, truth is our bitch. And, of course, we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. Thank you for being with us tonight. And we're going to be here, as I mentioned, to the preceding mentioned times. And we have a pretty good show this evening. We're going to talk with Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police because we figured he's the most likely guy to get to on this story that has the just has the smell of, law enforcement not doing its job. I hate to say that. U.S. Department of Justice, the FBI, and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement are going to be probing the Trayvon Martin killing in Sanford, Florida. This happened at the end of February, and this was a 17-year-old high school student from Miami Gardens. So he's from the south of the state. He's gone to Sanford, Florida, where he is staying at his father's girlfriend's house, and I don't know whether that is also a house that his father shares with a girlfriend, but nonetheless, he had been suspended. So he was up there staying with this other relative, or near this other relative. As he's walking to a nearby 7-Eleven store, he's spotted by a alleged neighborhood watch volunteer with a long history of calling in false alarms. His name is George Zimmerman. Mr. Zimmerman sees this boy and immediately calls the police to say he spotted someone who, quote, looks drugged or is walking too slowly. As it later turned out, Trayvon Martin had no drugs in his system. He also wasn't armed. Mr. Zimmerman then said that he turned his truck at a corner to see the street that he was on. As he got out to check this street name, he was attacked from behind by this kid, Trayvon Martin. Witnesses say they heard gunshots. They saw men wrestling, and Trayvon Martin is dead. Zimmerman claims self-defense. It's his word really against the kid because I don't think there were any witnesses who saw this from beginning to end. Sanford police, quote, investigated, end quote, and decide it was nothing to arrest Mr. Zimmerman over. Now, I don't know whether they said it was a justified thing, whether they were withholding their decision until later. In other words, they might arrest him later upon further investigation. But what we got here is a guy, a citizen, who had a right to carry the weapon. He had a license. We're not debating that. What we're debating, though, is did he have cause to fire this gun and kill this kid that he said was acting suspiciously? He said the kid's hands were in suspicious places, one in his waistband, the other holding something. As it turned out, the kid was holding a can of Arizona iced tea and a bag of Skittles. This, again, is this guy, George Zimmerman, who I saw at least the transcription, and I heard a little bit of the 911 call that he made. And at one point, he says something about how these blank blanks always get away. And he said, this guy looks wrong, and all kinds of things. He was also told by the police dispatcher, do not continue to follow him. He was asked, are you following him? He said, yes, I am. He says, all right, we don't need you to do that anymore. So he was sort of warned off of this individual. The next thing you know, this boy is dead, and this guy, Zimmerman, apparently has not been placed out of arrest, placed under arrest. It said here, according to a quote, I believe this is a quote from the local law enforcement, negligence, recklessness, mistakes, and accidents are not prosecutable under the federal criminal civil rights laws. Okay, so that's a federal cop talking. Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police joining us. Mr. Sanis, you have had your organization, the Citizens Auxiliary Police, which is a volunteer neighborhood organization, since 1996, correct?
Phil, it is correct, but I need for you to back up just a hair there because we are not a neighborhood watch group. We would not call ourselves a neighborhood watch group. We feel neighborhood watch groups are what they are. They're individuals who have no real knowledge of the life and the ways of law enforcement. We're here to save lives. And while you call us volunteer, we are committed to the safety of our neighborhoods.
And well, you're not an official police agency. The reason why I'm asking you is because this guy is carrying a weapon. Do you guys carry guns?
Well, again, I'm a little bit concerned about you comparing us to one of these neighborhood watch groups, you know.
This guy had a weapon on him. It was a...
My understanding, the man had... I don't want to really talk about this situation because I don't know enough about it, and I don't want our organization to get painted with the same broad brush that is being painted, which I hope that the full, justice befalls this individual, because I can tell you right now, I would never have a guy like this in our organization. He sounds nervous. He sounded like he was jumpy. Sounded to me like sort of a typical neighborhood watch person. That's why we don't, I am a little bit offended you calling us a neighborhood watch.
Well, all right. So, in other words, you think your organization, the Citizens Auxiliary Police, is not a neighborhood watch group. You are, I guess, better trained, would you say?
We're not. It's like asking the police, are you neighborhood watch or are you the police? We're the Citizens Auxiliary Police. And
well, you're not, okay, you're not officially recognized by the state or any of the states that you're in.
I don't know if that it matters. We don't have to be officially recognized to know what our rights are in the Constitution. We have a right of citizen's arrest. And I just want to, again, reiterate what I said to you a moment ago. This individual, this Zimmerman, sounds like not an individual I'm going to want to have anything to do with. He sounds, as I said, nervous, jumpy. Sounds like he has a nervous problem. I would never have him in our organization. I would never have any neighborhood watch person in our organization, because those people tend to be jumpy. They tend to be a little bit on the nervous side. They want to be cops. I can't tell you the number of people we get around here. They come hanging around the Citizens Auxiliary Police. They want to be cops.
Well, I mean, don't you attract the same kinds of people? You know,
why would we attract? I understand we're not officially the police. You're right, and we are a volunteer group, but we're not a bunch of wannabes. I think that's a little insulting to call us wannabes, because you can't really call us wannabes when we do have, we do have our own uniforms. We are acting under the constitutional right to arrest. I just don't think it's fair.
And all right, I don't want to say that you guys are involved in anything like this. I asked you a question if you carry guns. Do you carry guns?
We have no need for that, no. We are very secure in our ability to apprehend and to take down any suspect that we would want to. So we're pretty confident in all of that, certainly.
All right, well, now what was happening here was a neighborhood watch guy, you know, keeping in mind that you do not consider yourselves to be neighborhood watch people. And we're talking to Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. You're not a neighborhood watch group. You're a volunteer security force, shall we say.
No, I would not call us that either, because that brings to mind the security guards that are, you know, hired to patrol shopping malls.
All right, well, you're a security... I mean, you're some kind of a group. You're an auxiliary police agency, meaning you are a volunteer group.
We are a volunteer. We're a volunteer group of police. And to say that we have the same values as these nervous neighborhood watchers, who, I'd tell you right now, I wouldn't want to be around none of them. And I would most likely have to disarm them were we in the area. Even this guy who legally had that weapon, I would still have to pull him over and say, look, I get that weapon away from you, because I just have a sense that I know what you're going to do. And
Let me ask you the difference between you and this guy. If you saw a young man walking down the road, according to this guy, he looked drugged and he was walking too slowly in the rain, what would you do?
Well, first of all, Phil, we do not pull over or stop teenage boys for any reason. If there is a young person that is suspicious to us or needs to be spoken to, it's generally a young female, and the only reason why we would ever stop a young female is to see if she's carrying bags, to see if there's any kind of clothing in there that is might be the kind of clothing that you would not want to see a teenage girl wearing, or, you know, if there's any sort of bathing suit or any kind of a, I don't want to say that we're not prying, and this is not about, you know, us getting our kicks or anything, but if she's got any kind of underwear or anything like that. The only reason why we might stop a teenage boy.
So you would stop a teenage boy?
We generally do not, no. But if we did, it would generally be because of whatever kind of headphones, if he's wearing headphones of music he's listening to, which might influence some sort of rap old behavior, and that would be hip-hop.
And so if he's listening to rap?
And only to listen to what it is that he's listening to. Can we listen, you know, if he has headphones on, we want to give that a listen. If we do hear rap music, I am very familiar with rap music. A lot of it I like. I mean, I like Drake. I like Lil Wayne. But I can't let in many cases in a lot of these neighborhoods, these are Caucasian neighborhoods, you can't let a Caucasian hear a lot of that.
Why not?
I'm sorry?
Why not? What do you mean you can't hear a lot of Caucasian?
A lot of the white neighborhoods, not all of them, but a lot of them, it signifies something dangerous is all.
All right, we're talking to Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police here about this situation in Florida, this neighborhood watch guy that shot and killed someone walking down the street. As a member of the Citizens Auxiliary Police, Mr. Santos, his organization is a volunteer organization, too. He says he wouldn't have anything to do with a neighborhood watch group and that they don't stop teenagers. They don't even question the teenagers being in the area unless it's a female with clothing that she shouldn't be wearing or a young white kid listening to hip-hop. This whole world of neighborhood watch and volunteer watch groups, it's going to be coming under some scrutiny here in the near future. 877-876-7445. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It's Jay Santos from the Citizens Auxiliary Police as we talk about this neighborhood watch guy in Florida who is alleged to have shot and killed a young man from Miami who'd been staying up there and was walking down the street, and this neighborhood watch guy thought he was suspicious, and they got into it somehow. According to the neighborhood watch guy, the kid jumped him from behind. Do you believe any of this, Jay?
Well, I certainly would not want to have this neighborhood watch. First of all, neighborhood watch guys, neighborhood watch people tend to probably watch too many, you know, TV shows, cop shows, or have kind of a wannabe thing about them. I know you're talking about me and Citizens Auxiliary Police. No, we're not official police, and we're not paid. We are a volunteer. And I can go so far as to tell you that we use our homes as substations on weekends. You know, I use my own home as a substation or a holding cell on weekends. So some people will look at what we do and say that we're sort of Mickey Mouse or what have you. Well, I can assure you we're not Mickey Mouse. We are a group of people who are very serious about what we do. And as far as I'm concerned, these neighborhood watch people, they should all probably go into jail.
So you think this guy is guilty?
I don't know if he's guilty or not, but he sounds like the nervous type. I would not have pulled this boy over unless he had on some kind of headphones or some sort of a listening device or was, you know, listening on some kind of a radio or what they call these kids have a ghetto box or ghetto blaster, or they're listening to this hip-hop music or this kind of thing.
You made the comment here earlier, Jay, that you like hip-hop music yourself, but you can't have a Caucasian kid listening to that?
Well, I didn't say that.
Oh, yes, you did. Yeah, you did. You said it was suspicious.
Well, if I said that, I didn't say I was going to actually stop a kid from... I'm not going to stop a kid, you know. I'm not going to stop some kid from... Caucasian kid I'm saying, okay, it's the same thing as if you see a Caucasian down near the projects, and right away you know he's down there buying drugs. Well, if I see a Caucasian kid walking down the street listening to hip-hop, don't you think that right away he's going to want to be one of these hip-hops or hip-hop people, this kind of thing?
No, I don't think that. That's just it. I don't. It's, first of all, one is illegal buying drugs. The other is not. You know?
Well, you asked me, Phil, a question. I'll give you an answer. I personally like hip-hop music. I think I enjoy it, but that's me. I'm an adult. If you've got, as I mentioned, a kid. Now, the other is the teenage girls. If we see these girls going down the street.
You mentioned that the only reason why you'd pull over a teenage girl is if what?
The only reason we're going to stop a teenage girl is if she has bags that may have clothing she just purchased that we feel is probably not appropriate. If she got them, and I don't want to say because it makes us sound, some people have said it makes us sound like we've got some kind of a pervert problem. But if we, if she's got underwear, I'm certainly going to have to look at that second glance.
What does that mean? If she's got underwear, you got to look at it a second glance.
If she's under 18, she's got underwear that's from a sex shop. That's when we're going to have to take a stand.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number here. Let's go to Steve in Corona, California. Steve, how are you on the Phil Henry Show?
Yes, sir. I'm a father. I've got a young son. I also have a daughter. And I listened to what you just said about, and I'm very nervous.
You're doing fine, sir.
And I listened to the gentleman, what you said about having a boy walking down the street and he's listening to hip-hop.
Yes, sir. If I see a boy...
If you see him with headphones?
If I see a boy with headphones, yes, sir.
Okay. If he's walking down the street listening to music and it's not hip-hop music, then what?
Well, I think hip-hop is what we want to... concentrate on because we think it's probably the kind of music going to lead somebody to be interested in a gang life.
Okay, my son listens to Anthrax. Is there anything you could do about that?
Your son listens to what is that?
The group is Anthrax?
Yeah, Anthrax.
I don't know if that...
That's a band.
Well, we certainly have a problem with the name.
Yeah, well, that's my point. And I can't get my son to stop listening to that. Secondly,
you want your son to stop listening to Anthrax, I would certainly try and get more of parental control.
But there's nothing about the group Anthrax that's... Their music is great, and...
No, I understand that.
Certainly, the title of that group is what I've got a problem with, because it is about... obviously, it's a name that I've got a problem with.
It's a name that caused... Anthrax caused country trouble, and you got a kid that's... thinks that's cool to be listening to a band named after something that can kill the whole Eastern Seaboard. That would be a problem.
Okay, and then the other question about the girls. My daughter is going to be 14 this year. She's becoming a woman, and I love her very much. I also can see that she's becoming a woman, and there's no doubt in my mind that if she gets compliments from boys or whatever, however you want to call it, she's going to go right down to the drugstore and buy underwear.
Well, they're not going to go down.
Probably go down to a lady shop, huh?
Yes, sir. That's what I meant. She'll probably go down there and get underwear.
Well, that's where we're going to stop her and check, sir.
And you will.
Yes, sir.
Now, I want to ask a question about this because I'm not sure that I would want that. As a matter of fact, I'm sure that I wouldn't.
In what way?
I don't want some guys... like you, Jay, or your Citizens Auxiliary Police stopping my daughter and checking to see what she has in her bags.
Well, if she's a teenager, is what we're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
You would rather that she be secreting or otherwise hiding from you certain kinds of underwear. I'm not saying all underwear, Mr. Henry. We're not talking about that.
No, I think I understand what he means, Mr. Henry. It's not just the regular underwear. It's underwear that you can tell.
Underwear that is used for the purpose of a sexual encounter.
No, I understand that, and again, I don't know that I want you or anybody else in the Citizens Auxiliary Police checking into her bags. God dang, man, I'm telling you. Checking her bags to make sure that she, to make sure that she's got the right kind of underwear. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil,
welcome back. Here, the world famous Phil Hendry Show, and Jay Sandus of the Citizens Auxiliary Police is on the line with us as we talk about the Southern brand of justice there, I guess, in Sanford, Florida, because that's really what this was in your earlier comments. That was part of what this was about, Jay.
Well, I don't think that there's any doubt about it. We have Sanford police who sound like they don't know what they're doing. You got a sort of, excuse me for putting it this way, Phil, but, you know, I've been on the front lines of law enforcement a long time, and you got sort of a cracker mentality with this neighborhood watch.
Now, a lot of people are going to consider that rather racist or anti-white or anti-Southern white. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying anything about, you know, I'm white. I'm not saying, you know, I'm white, and I'm not saying I'm a cracker or anything of this nature. I'm just saying that you have that kind of mentality down there, and you got police officers who I think are second, third, fourth generation of a kind of mentality. If they see a black or, you know, one of the blacks, they get nervous. And
now, this was not the police, though, that pulled this gun and shot this guy.
No, I understand that, but it was the police that listened to this Zimmerman, who, by the way, if you think I'm saying, you know, an anti-white deal, that Zimmerman looks to me like he's at least Hispanic or Mexican or something.
Well, I mean, Mexican, Hispanic people are considered to be white. So that's not in terms of race, maybe culture.
Well, okay, you can say what you want, but he looked more Mexican than anything else.
All right, but again, the last name is Zimmerman, and even if you were Hispanic, they're still considered, that is considered the Caucasian race. Maybe in America we've got some subcultural differences, but I'm asking you specifically about the Sanford police. You're the Citizens Auxiliary Police. You're not a professional police organization, okay?
No, we're not, Mr. Henry, but I can tell you if there's one thing that Sanford could use, it would be a Citizens Auxiliary Police. This is a medium range to small southern city. It does not, in fact, probably qualify technically as a city. It's probably more of a town. If you want to look that up in Wikipedia or an encyclopedia or something, be more on a town size. Number two, the way they just signed off on this, you know, guy in his pickup truck, I would never sign off and say a guy in a pickup truck who had a gun and he shot down a kid who is black. I think you've got to be some sort of, you know, uneducated, illiterate person to just say, okay, you go right ahead, you have your soldiers, a tip of the pith helmet, and you have yourself go on a merry way.
Are you telling me as you are talking about this? Are you telling me that the Citizens Auxiliary Police, your group, is more professional than the Sanford Police?
We would have done a much more thorough job of investigating it. Yeah.
That's an interesting comment. I'd like to know what it would be. We're going to give our number out 877-876-PHIL. What would you gentlemen have done, being a volunteer police agency, not even a professional police agency?
You know, you're saying that an awful lot, Mr. Henry, and I don't see to what point are you trying to do.
What am I trying? Just letting people know that you're not a professional police organization. You've come on here criticizing the Sanford police, the Sanford, Florida police, the fact that this man Zimmerman was not charged with any crime, the fact that this man Zimmerman is out free. There doesn't appear to have been any charge, even manslaughter, leveled against this guy. I don't know how much investigation they put into it. And okay, so there are questions. Now you're coming along and saying that your group is better than that.
I think the American people today can look at this Southern police force and say that it probably needs to be, you know, I think it probably needs to have immediately some sort of a federal oversight or state oversight. We would be happy to come in. I'm not a professional, but I'll tell you right now, I'd do a better job than they did. And that's just how I feel about it. I think what they did was mostly a reaction if you won't call it Mayberry RFD, you call it Mayberry RFD. You know, to me, that's what it is. When the young black kid's walking down the street, and here comes a white guy in a pickup truck with a gun, I think you pretty much know you have to have your antenna up because something bad is bound to happen, and you better believe it did.
Talking to Jay Sanders of the Citizens Auxiliary Police, pulling over a teenager because he's listening to hip-hop.
Well, I'm saying that's what I would have done. I would never have hassled that kid. That guy stopped that kid because he had iced tea.
No, I understand. He stopped. He didn't even stop him. He stopped, and somehow something happened. But and I don't know what it was.
I'm pretty sure I got it figured out. I mean, it's easy as pie. And it also shows how much good we are. Because I can tell you right now, that guy stopped his truck. He looked. The kid looked at him. He got nervous. He pulled his gun out. Probably almost dropped it. I mean, you can almost imagine what happened. The guy pulled his gun and fumbled with it, probably almost dropped it, fired, the bullet ricocheted off the cement and killed the kid. I don't even think he probably was aiming at him. But
that's really interesting. There's no ballistics there at all, and there's no, I haven't seen any forensic evidence.
But I mean, the point that I'm trying to make here is that I would not have pulled that kid over or investigated that kid for anything. What I would have done, very, very simply, is if he was wearing headphones or if a teenage girl has got underwear.
We're talking to Jay Sanders here, the Citizens Auxiliary Police, 877-876-PHIL. We're going to bring on here now Dr. Jim Sadler, as well as Vernon Dozier, an educator and a psychologist, to talk to Jay about the dealing with young people, number one, and the psychology of a situation like this for police. Dr. Sadler, how are you?
Very good, Phil.
And Vernon, how are you, sir?
Yes, I can hear you, Phil. We're here in Glendale tonight. Got some construction going on in another room, so you can speak up.
Okay, I want to start with you. And Jay, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I'm not exactly sure I know why.
Well, I wanted to get some idea from either one of these men. If you are on target with your comments about whether these cops are professional enough, if we should be dealing with our kids strictly on the basis of the music they listen to and the clothes they wear, and if you guys are actually better. So Vernon, in terms of teenagers, hip hop music and the lingerie or the underwear.
Well, I don't think you can pull over a teenager and ask them what kind of music they're listening to or check their underwear. The only people that can check a teenager's underwear are the parents. If I felt that there was a stranger out there checking someone's underwear, I don't think I have to be a teacher to come up with this. I would very, very quickly put a stop to that.
Well, you'd be interfering then with me, sir.
I'd be interfering with you, huh?
Yes, sir. You'd be interfering with me and Citizens Auxiliary Police.
Ooh, that's...
you want to be sarcastic, sir?
Ooh.
Well, if you...
All right, let's not do that, okay?
I mean, he's saying I'm interfering with you, huh?
Yes, sir, that's right. You'd be interfering with Citizens Auxiliary Police. All right, Phil, I don't know.
Well, Vernon, have you got anything else to say besides that?
What else are you going to say, Phil? I've got a guy here who is swallowing his L's. He's not an official police officer.
I come from western Pennsylvania. It's an accent.
Yeah, okay. He's not an official police officer. And he's looking in a bag at a girl's underwear.
All right, Dr. Sandler, let me ask you, the psychology of a small-town police force dealing with whatever threats may be coming in from the outside on the one hand and a nervous citizenry on the other hand, what kind of a challenge does that create?
What are you talking about? The Sanford Police Department. I've done work with police agencies over the years. And I think it's important to recognize that there's a transition. Excuse me. There's a transition
that's going on between the very mentality and mindset that Mr. Santos was talking about, which is the 1960s boss hog mindset, and the new police science, new police methods, which I think are far more prevalent now. I'm talking about redneck. No, I understand you're talking about rednecks, but the redneck that you see, Mr. Santos, in the police department can very equally be applied to yourselves, that you are a redneck in the way that you look at this small town, that you have a prejudice. I don't have no prejudice, sir. All I'm saying is I'm trying to understand, that a kid I'm trying to understand. You know what I mean? I don't think you're up for the job.
Well, why is he not up for the job?
He wants to be a citizen's auxiliary police officer, but he's rapidly recognizing that that very thing that he wants to be, the very idea of a force like that, is what caused this tragedy in the first place. That's bull crap. No, it's not bull crap. Yeah, it is. No, it's not.
Well, okay, fine. I mean, it's a matter of opinion.
You two guys can, you know, argue all you want about it. But the point I'm making here is this guy's not a real cop.
Well, see, that's the thing I found the most infuriating. Call me not a cop. And you don't even speak good, too.
Well, neither one of you guys speaks, but he's not a cop. The neighborhood watch guy's not a cop. There are real cops, and the real cops weren't doing their job. And why is that? Because cops don't ordinarily do their job. I don't have a great deal of love for cops. I don't have a great deal of respect for cops. In fact, I don't like cops at all. But I'll tell you this much, if they have to exist, if we're forced to have them among us, then by God, they better start doing their jobs.
Sir, I think that's very destructive.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Mumbles. What was that?
Never mind. Why don't you go to...
What's that? You just told me to...
All right, hold on. You don't like cops, but if they're going to do their job, then they should do their job, huh?
What? I didn't say that. I said...
I got the general gist of what it was you were saying. We'll take another break here as we talk about what happened in Florida and around the country with neighborhood watch groups and the like. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Excuse me.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police, and we thank Jim Sadler and Vernon Dozier.
Phil, for me, it wasn't necessary to have those gentlemen on, though.
No, I understand that, but it gives us some perspective into the psychology of being a police officer, as well as the whatever the mindset is of these, you know, neighborhood watch people. 877-876-PHIL is our number. Here is Richard. Go ahead, Richard. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Who is with this pseudo police force? It seems
it's
like
not pseudo, sir. It's an auxiliary police force of a citizens auxiliary police.
Okay, which would be pseudo, just like pseudosciences are. It would be a pseudo law enforcement force. It's attitudes.
I understand that.
It's attitudes of that nature that give law enforcement a very bad name. I was in law enforcement for 7 years, and I'm currently a security guard. And to say that a pair of underwear or music is probable cause to stop a teenager is just insane, in my opinion.
There is a reason why you're no longer a police officer doing a security job. I mean, you know, we have to talk about that.
And where's your credentials, sir?
I'm sorry, my credentials? What do you mean, my credentials?
You said the university where you received your police science degree.
Well, I mean, Jay, I think what he's saying is if you're asking this gentleman what his qualifications are, what are yours?
Wait, excuse me, hold on. I wasn't fired from the police.
I never said I was fired. I actually was injured. I blew my knee out. So, broad statements, it sounds like you just have a one-sided mind, that you're a throwback to the 60s, and they need to keep people like you off the street trying to stop people.
I'm saying, if you want to see girls going down the street wearing any kind of underwear they want...
What does it matter? Well, close over it, sir. You sound like, you picked on this, so-called redneck backwoods location of Sanford, Florida,
right.
But you seem to have a lot of the same views as a person in that area would be, as Boss Hogg, as the previous gentleman spoke of.
I'm just trying to say that Sanford, Florida, is about as redneck as it's going to get. And they had a guy down there with a gun kill a kid, and the police down there probably sitting down breaking bread with this guy having a beer. I would not do that.
Your opinion is to stop crime, you have to find out what kind of music's in the kid's iPod and what kind of underwear she bought from Victoria's Secret.
I'm not asking to look up a kid's dress or nothing. I'm just seeing what's inside the bag. And you're
it's
telling
none
me
of your
that
business.
You would.
This is the United States of America, and they haven't taken all of our civil liberties away. When you graduate and you put your 2.5 to 4 years into a police science course, receive your certificate, pass the physical quals, and you're certified to carry a gun, then you can stop someone for probable cause. And the first time
I don't have time for those politics. You want to mess around with that? That's fine.
Talking about getting an education.
Well, I mean, if you're telling me that a kid going down the street listening to hip hop, and all they're talking about in the hip hop music is drugs and things they do.
You yourself proclaim to be a hip hop fan.
Very much so. Very much so.
Okay, so what's the difference between the 16-year-old kid walking around and you walking around? Maybe his parents
because
are smart enough to
I'm
tell
not susceptible. Him that. I'm not susceptible to the brainwash that it's doing.
No, you're just susceptible to ignorant pseudo law enforcement, and you just want to walk around and harass little kids in the mall.
I've been listening to that on a headphone though. I mean, if you think I'm susceptible to ignorant law enforcement, I'm not walking down the street pumping it into my head through headphones. I mean,
no, it's already predetermined in your mind, sir. And like I said, I've never called you
right,
anything. I've never. And
I appreciate your call, sir, very much.
This guy's telling me that I'm brainwashed, but it's a kid that's getting his brains cooked with the headphones. I don't get it.
No, anyway, thank you very much, Richard, for your call. 877-876-7445. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is...
I know what he's saying. He's saying that I'm brainwashed. I brainwashed myself, okay? I didn't brainwash myself.
He said that you're just as brainwashed with a mindset about law enforcement, which says that you should be able to stop some kid to see what kind of underwear she bought. But that's really, I think that we are so far afield, okay?
That's not brainwashing, Mr. Henry. That's something that I personally developed, a philosophy that I developed with Major Owen Newton.
With the what?
I said that's a philosophy that I developed with Major Owen Newton.
Major L. Newton?
Major Elvis Newton.
Oh, Major Elvis Newton, that's fine, but we're so far afield of where we want to be right now. We were supposed to be talking about the Citizens Auxiliary Police, and we're supposed to be talking about the situation in Florida, and what you call the dangerous neighborhood watch groups and the dangerous police department, and how you guys would do that so much better.
We would do a lot better. We would do a lot better. That's how pathetic some of these southern... redneck police forces, that's what I call police farce. Yeah, police farce. We would do a lot better. We would not be stopping some kid because he's eating Skittles and drinking an iced tea. And I don't think I'd let some redneck driving around with a truck with a gun. And
even though he has a license to carry it?
If he had a license to carry it, then my name's Donald. My name is Donald the Duck. Because I can tell you right now...
No, he had a license to carry it.
Well, okay, if he had a license to carry it, then somebody has done something very wrong. Very wrong. Because if you look at that guy, take a look at that guy and tell me that there isn't, if that guy isn't wrong, and that's a term that the police do use, we'll look at a guy and we'll say, boy, that guy's just wrong. You know? He's just wrong. And I look at him, he looks wrong.
So, meaning what? So he shouldn't have had that license?
He should not have been given a license to carry a weapon. And
based upon what?
Again, Mr. Henry, it's based upon police, the police science of looking right at that guy's face, and you can tell just the way he looks out of his face, he's crazier than a crap house rat. That's all I'm saying.
Well, okay, Jay, good luck with your analysis of that situation in South Florida, because it's only going to get uglier. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. The John Carter film has lost $200 million, putting it among the worst flops ever. And the Vikings have brought mice to Greenland. We'll talk about that and more, along with James Cameron. Is he an ego case heading to the deepest part of the ocean? A dive that he's going to be attempting at the Marianas Trench. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
World famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and it's a bitch getting at it some nights. And we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, to get to that truth. All right, so in any event, we have a story here. Margaret Gray is going to come on the line from A Little Bird Told Me, the nationally syndicated newspaper column from the Dicklin Syndicate. James Cameron heads into the abyss. James Cameron, who you may or may not know, is the director who made Titanic, Terminator, and Avatar, and a bunch of other flicks, man. I mean, this guy is, he's a hit maker as a director. The director who once proclaimed himself, in fact, king of the world, is about to become the master of the depths if all goes to plan. James Cameron, director of the 1997 blockbuster Titanic, will soon use his own unique submersible to become the first person since 1960 to reach the deepest place in the ocean. But although most attention will be focused on the boldness of the engineering feat, his expedition includes a substantial scientific component aimed at better understanding one of the world's most extreme and least studied environments. The goal of all of this is not just to set records and do grandstanding dives, Cameron told Nature just hours before heading to sea. We want to push the envelope not only of scientific knowledge, but also of engineering. And joining us on the line from Santa Monica, California tonight is Margaret Gray to talk with us about this, this amazing feat, this unusual feat, I would say, coming from somebody in the entertainment world. Diving to the deepest part of the ocean. Margaret, how are you tonight?
Well, I'm doing well, Phil, and like you, I look upon this as an unusual attempt for someone who is in the line of work of a James Cameron. James Cameron made one of the most compelling, one of the single most dramatically compelling films in all of history, and that was the film Titanic. From the special effects that he engineered into that film, really to the love story and to the larger historical context of immigrants, as well as the upper classes, as well as the capitalists and industrialists, who traveled aboard this very ill-fated ship on a very, very cold night. In 1912 or...
You know what? That's a good question. But it was prior to World War One.
I didn't hear you. What?
It was prior to World War One.
Well, that's a lot of years prior to World War One.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is it was after the turn of the century. It was in the, I believe you're correct, either in the second, I think it was in the second decade of the century. The reason why I say that is the two biggest events prior to World War I in my mind were the San Francisco earthquake and the sinking of the Titanic, and I could be wrong about that.
Well, I think I would put the assassination of McKinley in there, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. I apologize.
I think the assassination of an American president is much, much more significant.
No, you're absolutely right, Margaret. I guess I mean in terms of big disasters, you know.
Well, again, I would think that the assassination of a president is a big disaster. And this is really one of, if I could just go off topic for a moment. So one of the problems that I have with coming on these radio programs and doing these interview programs, I wish the hosts, and this is not necessarily you, Phil, but I think you could learn from this. I just wish the hosts were a little bit better informed.
Well, Margaret, I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you.
But I wish they were better informed, and then I wish they would let me do what I do best, which is explain the actual facts of something before they start jumping in and giving opinions that really don't provide anything.
Can I say something?
Hold on, please, and then I'll let you say what you want to say. So when I do radio interviews and I get a host such as yourself, Phil, you're not the worst. I mean, the worst is probably, I would say the worst that I ever dealt with in terms of really not asking the best questions in the world was Michael Medved, who I found to be a little thick. And I know that he probably would chalk that up to the fact that he's a conservative and I'm a liberal.
Yeah, maybe, because I don't find Michael that way at all. I think he's extremely intelligent. I know him, and I know his brother.
Well, good for you, Phil. You know, we want to start dropping names.
I don't believe I brought his name up first. I think you did. All right.
No. Well, yes, all right. I did bring his name up. But I did not ask you to jump in on the issue of the Titanic.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
No, I did not.
Yes, you did. You said, what year was it?
No, I'm afraid I did not, Phil. I do remember.
You said to me, was it 1911? I don't know. And I said, I believe, yes, it was.
No, I didn't ask you what the year was. I said, was it 1911 or not? I didn't ask you to go into a big, long...
You know, we're wasting a lot of time here.
I know that. And I'm embarrassed for you, I'm embarrassed for you, and I'm embarrassed for myself. Let's just back up and start all over again. I can do this another night if you want.
All right. I mean, if you want to reschedule.
Well, no, I don't. But what bothers me is that you continually argue with me.
Ms. Gray, I'm not trying to argue with you about anything. You asked me, I thought at the outset of this interview, the year that the Titanic sunk.
I wouldn't. If I'm on this program to talk to you about the Titanic, for God's sake, why would I ask you when it sunk? You must take me for an idiot. I did not do that, Mr. Hendry.
Okay, I didn't know you were coming on to talk about the Titanic. James Cameron.
Well, James Cameron, yes. That's why I'm on the program to talk about James Cameron, but one of the biggest movies he ever directed was Titanic.
Yes, it was.
All right. So why would I come on here not armed with the facts? It's not important to know what year the Titanic went down in the context of this. But if I ask you, was it 1911, that's not asking you when the date is. I know what I'm talking about, thank you. And it's embarrassing to have you do that. And all I'm asking for, Phil, is to treat me the same way you would treat any other interview subject, with respect, and not just because I'm the dumb woman, all right?
That is really unfair. I've never done that with you, and I will never start. I have never treated you differently because you're a woman.
Not because I'm the Duell Field, you can say what you want, but not because I'm the dumb woman.
I've never done that with you, Ms. Gray, and I think it's very unfair. I have never, ever treated you as if you were the dumb woman. This started out, and my listeners can back this up.
That is very unfair.
Well, they heard it. They heard you say, was it 1911?
Well, right there, you're mocking my voice. You're going, well, it's 1911, as if I'm the dumb little ingenue, the stupid little girl who doesn't quite know where her next class is, and would you carry my books for me?
No, I did not, Ms. Gray. You asked me if it was 1911, and I said I didn't know. I think so, but I didn't know.
That's not asking you the year, though, is it?
You were at, well, yeah, you were asking me, was it 1911?
I was asking you, was it 1911? I didn't say what year was it and what was the date, did I?
What I...
Did I?
No, you did not.
Okay. The time that we have wasted here has really, really put me off.
Can we get back on track? Can we get back on track?
Yes, we can, if I can be assured that I will not be asked stupid questions by you, and hopefully if you do take phone calls from your listeners, that I will not have to endure questions from them that are argumentative. And
well, the nature of what we do is that, you know, people give their opinion.
I've listened to the nature of what you do, quote unquote, and I'm not impressed. So again, I will continue if I am not insulted by the host, and if I'm not asked to answer questions from listeners that really just wouldn't, should not be introduced into an intelligent forum.
I will do my very best. My screeners will do their best in making sure you get good questions. In the meantime, I don't want to bring up the Titanic. I'm not telling you what to talk about. I want to get into James Cameron's latest very interesting adventures as a submariner and as a deep sea diver.
Well, submariner, that's an interesting word. You know, your brother was in the submarines in the Navy, correct?
Yes.
That's the only reason why I would allow you to even use that word, because if you were a different host and you tried to insult me by showing some erudition and using the word submariner, I would hang the phone up.
All right, well, hold on, and please don't hang up. 877-876-7445. Wow. James Cameron, the great film director, has attacked and is going after something, an adventure. He is heading into the Mariana Trench, 10,900 meters deep, the Mariana Trench off the coast of the Philippines. It is considered to be the deepest part of our oceans here on our beautiful planet Earth. 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Famous Phil Hendry Show, and on the line with us is Margaret Gray as we talk with her about James Cameron, the director, and this really amazing trip, this amazing adventure that he is now currently on, to go to the Mariana Trench and to dive to the bottom of the Mariana Trench, if I'm not mistaken, which is 10,900 meters deep. 10,900 meters deep, Margaret.
And Phil, yeah, that is about 3.5 to 4 miles. No, that is 10,000 meters, 3,000. That's about 1 to 2 miles deep.
It's 10,900 meters.
Yes, that's 1 to 2 miles deep. That is incredibly, incredibly deep for an ocean. And
I think the math is different.
No, the math is fine. The other thing that I was able to find, the sinking of the Titanic, was 1911. That was in April of 1911. On April the 16th of 1911, the Titanic was sunk. And James Cameron is going to the Mariana Trench, and he is going to dive to a depth of 1 mile. And what else would you like to know, Phil?
I don't understand the sarcasm.
Well, because ever since I came on your program, you have, at every turn, tried to make me look stupid.
No, I have not. You asked me at the beginning, is that 1911? You asked me the year. All right.
Yeah, and I found out it was 1911, and you said, no, it wasn't.
I didn't think it was.
It was 1911. And the Mariana Trench is a mile deep. And James Cameron, and the whole reason why I came on your program, Phil, was to simply say this. James Cameron is a great director. But I think he takes it a little far, and I think the unrestrained ego of that man takes it just a little too far when he starts talking about being a deep-sea diver and a submariner and an explorer and an engineer and this and that. I think he has got a screw loose when he thinks he's so important that this is where his ego has taken him.
And yet, it's an interest of his that James Cameron, we know for a fact that this man has an interest in this particular topic, especially ever since he did the film, that he has built this submarine. It's called the Deep Sea Challenger. He's going to a gash that is 10,900 meters deep in the Mariana Trench called Challenger Deep. So I think that's why he called this craft of his the Deep Sea Challenger.
Where is he going? I'm sorry, he's going to the Mariana Trench.
Yeah, no, he is, but there is a particular part of the Mariana Trench that is described in the story that I'm reading here in Nature as a gash that is more than 10,900 meters deep.
Well, it's an unfortunate description, given the fact that you have females listening to your broadcast. That's a very unfortunate, very crude, and very insulting description. This is why I wanted to take the lead in all of these stories that we're doing tonight, because what you've done is you've misinformed the audience, Phil. You've insulted me. You're giving out bad information.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Are you in a bad mood tonight?
No, so you're not going to make it about me, quote, being on the rag, okay? No, we don't get to do that.
No, I'm not saying you're on the rag, but from the very beginning of this hour, when you called up, you've had it in for me.
Listen to the picked-on man.
No, well, I mean, starts out with, gee, Phil, what year was it? It was 1911. Well, there you go. You know, from the very beginning, you started finding fault with what I was saying here. From the very start.
I'm trying to give this audience a fighting chance to enjoy an hour of information and not have you destroy what I have tried to scholastically, academically put together and to impart to your audience. And it's not going to do us any good to get dates wrong.
Well, when you start off the show by asking, what year was the Titanic sunk?
I didn't ask that, did I? I said, was it 1911?
Well,
see, that's what you got wrong, and that's what you do. That's what you do. That's what you do. I didn't say, what year was it? I said, was it 1911? And you said no.
I said no. Right. Can we get back to this story?
Go ahead.
Cameron built his sub, which is called the Deep Sea Challenger, in Australia. He's not released how much money he spent on construction of the expedition. It has space for only one cramped person in its unusual 7.3 meter tall vertical design, which streamlines the dives and ascents. A large bank of lights above the spherical cockpit will illuminate the depths for filming documentaries that he'll produce in collaboration with National Geographic.
And they're right there. That's another very unfortunate aspect to this. Just because he made a film called The Titanic doesn't mean that National Geographic has to fall all over itself and say, oh, let's make documentaries with James Cameron. He made a science fiction movie. He made a film called Titanic, which is based on some fanciful story about a woman that threw a diamond or a gem into the ocean. That's supposed to qualify him to make documentaries? I don't think so. And yet National Geographic can't wait to get into bed with James Cameron. So I find fault with that. I find fault with the fact that he has these lights on top of the submarine. That is typical James Cameron hubris. I'm going to build a submarine, but it won't just be a submarine. As it goes down through the ocean, as it sinks down through the ocean, it'll have all these really neat lights that just go, woo, just light up. And it's such an ego on the man to have all these ridiculous and asinine-looking craft going down through the ocean. I'm surprised he doesn't have a big bay window in it so he can wave at all the fish. I really mean it.
Well, there's no point in being stupid. You know,
I'm not being stupid. That's the kind of ego that James Cameron has. Build a big window and wave at all the fish and wear a King Neptune outfit. That is the kind of man we're talking about. Okay? So here's a guy that says he's going 10,900 meters deep, a full mile. Big deal. He sinks the Titanic for a movie. And I don't to this day know whether he got the movie right, got the date right in the movie. He built a craft in Australia. Why? Because Peter Jackson's in Australia and James Cameron won't be outdone. It's a craft with a lot of needless lights. It's a craft with a big bay window. It's a craft where he gets to put on his King Neptune outfit and wave at the fish and sort of be a little mad, a mad king in the underworld.
All right, I got to take a break here, okay?
Craft with all of these lights. No. What is it?
I got to take a break. Hold on. 877-876-7445. Is James Cameron, by going to the bottom of the ocean in this submarine, is it just another ego trip? Is James Cameron even qualified to do something like this? Because he's a movie director. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry.
It's a craft that says to me that the...
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Margaret Gray on the line with us here as we talk about James Cameron's expeditions there to wherever that... Oh, to the Marianas Trench. Let me talk about...
First of all, Phil, it's not the Marianas Trench. It's called the Mariana Trench. The term that you use, which is, I believe, the... this Challenger Deep that you called a gash, is about as disgusting as it gets. In terms of women. And
ma'am, this is not what I call it. It's what was described in the article in Nature.
It doesn't matter if it was in Nature. It's insulting to women. And what we're trying to do, and what I've been trying to do in talk radio especially, is to bring more women to the table, not to drive them away. You understand?
Yes, I understand that. But if I'm reading an article from Nature magazine, which talks about some gash that's 10,000 meters deep in the Mariana Trench, I didn't make that up. I didn't say, oh, well, I think I'll call it that to offend women. That's what was written there.
I wish scientists would be a little bit more thoughtful.
Well, I wish a lot of things, okay? You and I have been arguing here for 40 minutes while I'm trying to get this information out about James Cameron.
And I'm trying to tell you there's nothing to tell about James Cameron. James Cameron made a movie. He made a couple of movies. And now, all of a sudden, he's decided to take some of the money that he's made and build a submarine. Not help people with it, not do anything.
Now we're going to get to the whole point of this thing. Now what you want to talk to me about is James Cameron's lack of what? Philanthropy?
Yes, exactly. His lack of philanthropy. His lack of humanity. Humanity. You know what that is, don't you?
Yeah, I know what that is. I know what that is. And I have no way of knowing that James Cameron has no... just because he builds a submarine. And if what you wanted to do when you came on here is to talk about what a douchebag the guy is, then we could have done that. Instead of coming at it sideways, which is to say, well, hey, James Cameron has this plan.
I didn't come at this thing sideways. You were the one that was all enthusiastic about it. I told you that I thought what James Cameron was doing was a festival of ego. What this man was proposing to engage in was one of the most outrageous displays of egocentricity that I have ever had the misfortune to have to take a deep breath around. Because it smells, Phil. It stinks. It stinks like something fetid and corrosive.
Then you have the contacts with these people.
What do you mean, these people? What does that mean?
I'm talking about the Hollywood types. You have the contacts with them. Those are the individuals that you talk to. You can say something to him.
And what do you want me to say to James Cameron?
What do I want you to say? I don't want you to say anything. I haven't got a problem with James Cameron. He's a perfectly fine person as far as I'm concerned. I don't know the guy.
So you've never wanted to get to know just what kind of human being he is?
I've never even had the remotest interest. I know he makes a movie. He made a couple of movies, Titanic and Terminator.
Well, he made more than one Terminator.
Well, whatever. It doesn't make any difference to me. He made these movies. He made Avatar.
Did you see that? Now, that was a spiritual experience. Did you see that?
No, I did not.
I'm sorry?
No, I did not see it. No, I'm sorry. I missed out on that spiritual experience.
Oh, my God.
What happened?
You didn't see Avatar.
Give me the phone. Well, it's Frank.
Hey, Frank. How you doing?
I'm better than Custer. Look, she is obviously a great director. There's no question about the fact that she's made some great films. What he's trying to say, though, is that that doesn't translate...
Now, hold on for a minute, because people don't know you've got gender confusion because of that untreated syphilis. All right?
Untreated gonorrhea, and I don't know what you're talking about.
You can't tell him directly he has gender confusion because it doesn't compute.
Go ahead.
Can I talk?
Go ahead.
She's made great movies. There's no question about it. James Cameron has made Titanic. She made that. And, yeah, she made it with a big budget. Now, Margaret's my wife. He's a great wife. I love him. I love him dearly. What he's trying to say is that a film director does not make you a scientist.
I know that. I understand that.
Well, then what are you two arguing about? He's saying one thing, and you're saying something else.
I don't know what we're arguing about. I said to her that I think James Cameron made good movies. I hope that his little you know, trip to the bottom of the ocean does. What is that, man? That sounds really strange. What was that, anyway? Hey, Frank, what was that?
Hold on. My wristwatch. I got to take some pills. All right.
Is that an alarm?
Yeah.
I said to her that I felt that James Cameron was a good film director. I don't know anything about. She's telling me that 10,900 meters deep is a mile.
What did he say?
She said 10,900 meters deep is a mile.
It is a mile. How dare you?
Give me the phone, will you? Oh, it's not a mile, Margaret. It's about 6 miles, you idiot.
What is?
10,900 meters.
10,900 meters, about 3 feet per meter. Let's just roughly, okay? That's about 30,000 feet, give or take, 5.5, 6 miles.
Did you hear that?
You know something? This is Phil Hendry doing math. That's about as sure a thing as, I don't know, that Brooklyn Bridge deed you've got. No, I don't buy that at all.
All right, and then the other thing that she said was that the Titanic was sunk in 1911. It was 1912. So put it all together, and what do you got? You got an hour of radio here that I didn't want to engage in. I wanted to have facts.
She says that she wanted to engage in facts, and you want to engage in what?
I want to engage in facts too, Frank.
All right, he says he wants to engage in facts just like you. She's been telling me that...
Will you call me he or get off the phone, please?
Give me the phone, will you?
What is it with him?
I told you, it's gender confusion.
What do you mean, gender confusion? I've never heard of that before in my life.
You've never heard of gender confusion?
No, I have not. I've never heard of that. I've never heard of untreated syphilis getting to the brain and only doing that much damage, and the rest he's just fine. Why doesn't that guy get it? God, that's disgusting.
You're talking about Frank Gray, one of the great producers and entertainment attorneys in the history of...
Oh, okay. You know, you got a ball like a baby. I just don't want to get on the phone with him and have him say, hey, she says, he says, and he's talking about a he and a she. I mean, it's just too weird for me. Do you understand? Do you understand?
Yes.
Oh.
You can't yell at him like that.
Get off the phone.
I got it, Frank. Don't worry about it.
I'm going to get on the extension.
I got it. I'll take care of it. The final thing that I want to say about James Cameron is this, Phil. If James Cameron attempts this expedition and it is unsuccessful, if for whatever reason the pressures, and there are enormous, enormous physical pressures at that kind of depth, at 10,900 meters, whether it's only 3 feet deep or 6 miles deep. The pressures exerted are enormous. They can literally cave a man's skull in. They can explode his eyeballs. They can peel away what's left of his eardrums, leaving only tunnels of blood.
All right. God, I get it, okay? I understand.
So what he is doing is he's putting himself at risk of that. And, Phil, I'll tell you this much. If James Cameron meets a fate as horrible as what I've just mentioned to you, there's going to be a lot of problems. There's going to be a lot of lawsuits. There's going to be a Hollywood funeral, the likes of which you haven't seen before. It's going to shut some studios down. It's going to be bad.
Well, I will tell you this much.
What's wrong with you?
Well,
you better clear your throat.
I'm clearing my throat. I'll tell you this much. There's no way that James Cameron takes a trip like this without taking out all kinds of insurance.
Do you think the studios are insuring him?
I don't know. I don't think it matters. I think James Cameron has taken out insurance, or people have taken out insurance on him, business partners. You know, believe me when I tell you, there's no way there isn't insurance, all kinds of insurance, covering this trip. There's all kinds of insurance, not only covering the equipment, not only covering what, you know, may or may not become of these documentaries. There's insurance covering James Cameron. So I don't think you have anything to worry about there.
My God, I hope you're right. I really hope.
You've made a big deal out of nothing, Margaret. You came on here and insulted me.
I didn't insult you.
Yes, you did. You called me a liar. You called me an idiot. You said that I got all this stuff wrong. And it's going to be a long time before I talk to you again on these airwaves.
No, you can't level a threat like that. I'm way bigger than you.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Telling me what's wrong with the show, what's right with the show. I got the name wrong, this, that, for the whole freaking hour. I never did get to this James Cameron expedition or what it meant. So you wait and you watch.
Don't you threaten me, Phil Hendry. I'm big.
You really meant that, huh?
You better believe I meant it. That's the last time I get her on the air and that husband of hers. You know, I like Frank a lot.
Yeah, you ought to get along with him.
I like Frank a lot. I think he's a great guy. But I'll be a gone you-know-what, man.
Yeah, man.
That's right. If I'm going to let that guy come on here, and every time he does, hey, he, she, he's got the whole thing reversed, and I'm supposed to accept that. I got to go along with some rule book on how to talk to Frank. I say, get him to the hospital, get him treated.
I heard him say that there's no way you can treat that.
What do you mean there's no way you can treat that? That sounds like a speech therapy problem. It sounds like he's got some brain damage that's neurologic. I don't know. All right, we got a lot of news to get to here tonight in our News and Information Hour, our final segment of this hour, coming up here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445, and philhendryshow.com with live streaming video of our show tonight. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. So you heard that story earlier tonight. We were talking with Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police that it actually took place at the end of February. It was a kid who was in Sanford, Florida. He was there visiting a father, I think, who was staying with a girlfriend, something along those lines. Nonetheless, the kid's walking to the store. He's got an Arizona iced tea, and he's got a bag of Skittles with him. And as he's walking along, he's spotted by this George Zimmerman, this guy whose picture has been prominent. The first time I saw this guy Zimmerman, I said, well, he looks Hispanic. Not that it makes any difference in the strict racial profiling sense. However, in the cultural sense, it makes a difference to some people. Nonetheless, the kid's walking down the street, and this guy calls the police and says the kid looks weird or he looks wrong or something like that. The next thing you know, he's in a wrestling match with this kid, and his gun goes off, and he has killed this boy by the name of Trayvon Martin. Apparently, there was some sort of a struggle, or there was some kind of a wrestling match, and that's what happened. Zimmerman had claimed to the police that he stepped out of his truck to check the name of the street he was on when Trayvon attacked him from behind as he walked back to his truck. He said he feared for his life and fired the semi-automatic handgun he was licensed to carry because he feared for his life. So this guy is saying that he got attacked from behind by this kid who, as it turned out, was only armed with iced tea and candy from a 7-Eleven. Now, the weirdest part of all the weirdest part about all of this isn't so much what this jackass is talking about. This Zimmer, it's really hard to believe the guy. I personally don't believe him. You know, I mean, that's just the reason why I don't believe him is it's not likely that a kid is going to attack a guy who just so happens to be really paranoid of that very kid. And he's gotten out of his truck, and he has his back to the kid as he's looking at a sign. He said he was attacked from behind. And the kid's attacking him from behind. And if this guy was so paranoid, what's he doing turning his back on the kid? He must have had his eyes on this kid the whole time. He said he got out of his truck to check the name of the street that he was on. He said he feared for his life, and he fired the semi-automatic handgun. This is a guy that's been calling the cops a lot. And he's been giving him all kinds of false, you know, alarms about the people in the neighborhood and just all kinds of weird stuff like that. Several witnesses said they heard cries that sounded like a boy wailing. I mean, I don't know if you heard those. We played this tape actually during the pre-show, and you could hear this somebody yelling. And the howling was silenced by gunfire. Then they heard the police later portray the cries as Zimmerman's. The police chief has been accused of telling lies big and small in ways that shield Zimmerman. And now members of Congress are going nuts. And the police chief is under fire. The whole thing is from an outsider's point of view, and maybe that's good or I don't know whether that's good or bad, you know?
Like Casey Anthony.
It's like the what?
Like the Casey Anthony trial.
Yeah. Everybody thought she was guilty, but then I look, and the people looking at the closest to it say she's innocent.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe it is. But I, you know, at some point, you know what happens in this world is you're asked to believe things, and then you start wondering, am I crazy? Maybe I'm nuts. Maybe I'm nuts, you know?
Like what?
Well, like in a Casey Anthony thing. You're looking at this thing, and see, now, in retrospect, when I think of the Casey Anthony trial, I fully blame the prosecutors. I was like everybody else. I thought, oh, they did such a great job, the DA and that Linda What's-Her-Ass and that Jeff What's-His-Name and the rest of the, weren't they just great? And they're so wonderful, and the jury is just as stupid as hell. Well, maybe the jury was stupid. There's no question that there's all kinds of stupid people in this world that get on juries. But all of a sudden, I don't know how long it took me, but I sort of woke up one day and said, you know what, those attorneys, really, they did. They butchered the hell out of that case. You know, they should have known, man, that they had to be a little bit more, I don't know, scientific in presenting this thing. They were coming from all different kinds of places, like this kid's going to talk, and so she's going to strangle the kid. In other words, if she strangled the kid, don't you think you should be concentrating more on, well, okay, where's the evidence of the strangling as opposed to the whys, you know?
Yeah, I guess so, man. But I'm just saying, you know, they're still dumbass.
Yeah, the jury's still dumbass to say that about that and a judge.
The judge?
Yeah, judge was an idiot, too.
The judge wasn't an idiot. He was smart.
Which one's the guy that was the tall, gray-haired guy?
That's an attorney. That ain't the judge.
Oh.
Anyway, the point being that this Casey Anthony trial, it sort of got everybody thinking, well, maybe I'm nuts. You know, maybe I'm not seeing things the right way. Maybe I mean, you know. No, folks. You're not nuts. Neither am I. No, we saw it the right way. She killed her kid. She stuck that kid in that car. She's a psychopath. Who can drive around with a dead body in her car, with the stink of a dead body in her car, and it doesn't even bother her. That's the kind of psychopath you're dealing with. And then she took the body and she threw it out into some weeds. And guess what? The combined law enforcement of Orange County, Florida, and the legal minds of the district attorney's office in the whatever district it is there, the combined efforts of all of those entities that the taxpayers spend quite a bit of money for, the combined efforts could not find a way to find proof of guilt of a woman who drove around with this dead body in her car and then just said, oh, I gotta get rid of it, and got rid of it in a vacant lot or something, not more than a few miles away from her house. That's how much she covered that one up. You talk about a trail of evidence. Okay, so now we got this. You got the thing here in Florida. And you got a guy, and you got a kid, and you got a dead kid. You got a guy who's got a history of calling in all kinds of crazy stuff. He's got a gun. You got a kid that's not armed. He didn't have a gun. And the kid's dead. And this cat hasn't even been arrested for anything. Nothing. I mean, what about manslaughter? What about, how do you determine that? I mean, this was February the 26th. Okay. So today is the, you know, the later part of March. So now there's been 2 weeks. 2 weeks of investigation here. 2 weeks of investigation. And they have determined from these 2 weeks of investigation that this guy was defending his life against a kid with Skittles and Arizona iced tea. Now, it's possible that the kid's got some neurological problem or a disease, or he's got some mania that caused him to just suddenly start foaming at the mouth and jump this guy from behind. But you got to have some evidence of that. You got to have some proof of that. You got to have some medical report, don't you? Don't you have to have a witness? Don't you have to have somebody other than this guy saying, oh, yeah, I saw that kid run, and he jumped, and he grabbed the guy, and he started biting his neck, or whatever the hell somebody would have to be doing to you who's unarmed to make you take a gun and blow him away? I don't know. That's why I say sometimes it makes you think you're crazy. All right, we're going to come back with our News and Information Hour here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go anywhere, all kinds of places that other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, and that just is our fate in life. And we're on Twitter at twitter.com/RealPhilHendry, RealPhilHendry, and also Phil Hendry Show. And we have a fan page at Facebook, which is Phil Hendry Fans. Phil Hendry, P-H-A-N-S. So if you go to Facebook, go to facebook.com/PhilHendryFans. And with me is Robert Leonard here and Bud Dickman. There's a couple of things here. There's been a lot of really bummer things, you know, in the news here that we were talking about, Bud, because that's just, you know, what's going on here.
Get that guy down and don't even know anything about that thing in Florida.
Well, the thing in Florida happened back in February. And
what about that? What about that? This one here.
Don't bump into the microphone, okay, Robert?
Yeah, right here.
Vikings brought mice to Greenland. What about it, man?
Dare you talk about that?
That's interesting, man. I don't talk about that thing in Florida. How many times do I want to talk about it?
All right, all right, all right, all right. But I just to put a capper on that, what we were saying. I mean, it's just been a lot of bummer news. I don't know. You're right. I didn't know that thing in Florida was going on until actually I saw a couple of people tweeting about it. You know, Twitter is, it's either a blessing or a curse. I don't know. I haven't figured out what it is. It's either a great place to sort of get the, you know, the feel of the culture, right? Or it's just, it's the most depressing environment because you see how many people are in desperate need of a life. you know.
Yeah, a lot of people are just tweeting stupid stuff like, oh, wow, I just saw something on TV. It looked like something hanging out of a guy's nose and everything.
Yeah, another one, some people are always retweeting other people.
Retweeting other people?
Yeah. Who cares, you know? They never say nothing themselves. They'll just say what other people say.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. I mean, this thing here, I find out a lot of stuff that's going on. Like, I didn't know that certain people had died if it hadn't been for the fact that I was on Twitter. Sometimes you get the very first news over there. I was not aware of this situation. I wasn't really, to be honest with you, I wasn't really all that involved in the West Memphis 3 story until, you know, people were talking about it on Twitter, and then I got kind of hooked into it. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, like I said, it's a great place. It's a great source of information, but I don't want to hang around there very long because it gets to be, like I said, really depressing. All right. Vikings brought mice to Greenland. Is this what you want me to read about?
Yeah, I think it's good.
Who cares the Vikings brought the mice there?
I do, man.
Researchers have discovered that mice species found in Newfoundland, Greenland, and Iceland were likely brought there by Viking explorers in the 11th and 12th century.
Was they pets?
Yeah, maybe.
What do you mean, were they pets? They were probably brought on the ships.
No, read the story.
All right, but they weren't pets. They probably came on board the ship when they were loading the ships in wherever the hell they were loading them, Finland or...
Yeah, Viking, you know, like in Viking land.
Yeah, Viking land. Researchers have discovered that a mouse species found in Newfoundland, Greenland, and Iceland were likely brought there by Viking explorers in the 10th and 11th centuries. Oh, so they've made it earlier. It was the 11th and 12th centuries, but then the next paragraph, it's the 10th and the 11th centuries.
They're probably changing it, and they forgot to change the other one. And
if you shut up. A new study published in BMC Evolutionary Biology tested both live mice and mouse bones, found that the Vikings inadvertently brought the creatures over along with other livestock. Huh? A new study by BMC Evolutionary Biology tested both live mice and mouse bones. Oh, and found that the Vikings inadvertently brought the creatures along. That's what I mean.
What's inadvertently mean?
Inadvertently means, you know, accidentally. Or they did, but they didn't mean to. It just, they happened, the mice got on board the ship as they were bringing on other animals. We can match the pattern of human populations to that of the house mice, said Eleanor Jones at the University of York and Uppsala University and a co-author of the study, according to Scientific American. Human settlement history of the last 1,000 years is reflected in the genetic sequence of mouse mitochondrial DNA. Human settlement history of the last 1,000 years is reflected in the genetic sequence of mouse mitochondrial DNA. Huh?
Yeah, what they're saying that the mice evolved like they're human mice or something.
What do you mean human mice?
Well, like a domesticated.
They're not domesticated mice. There's something that I'm not reading right here. Human settlement history of the last 1,000 years reflected in the genetic sequence. Jones and her colleagues found that the house mouse subspecies Mus musculus domesticus... Oh, maybe it is domesticated. Mus musculus domesticus arrived in Iceland from Norway and Britain in the 10th century, which researchers know is exactly the time of the Viking conquest. Oh, that's what that's what I meant to say. So they know how far back the mouse, what do you want to call it?
Like the mouse tree.
Yeah, the mouse tree.
The mouse tree. You mean the mouse family tree?
Yeah.
I bet you if they look deep enough on that thing, man, they'll find Mighty Mouse.
Yeah, but they'll find to go back and find Mighty Mouse, all of them mice.
What's so funny about that?
Oh, get out of here, will you?
They got a super mouse named Super Moose.
That's the name of the mouse, Mus musculus domesticus. Anyway, the Vikings would eventually move on to Greenland and Newfoundland, and then finally, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Vikings were eventually, they moved on to Greenland and Newfoundland. Do you know something? This is not, germane to what we're talking about, but I just have to mention it. The Minnesota Vikings, when they moved to Minnesota, when they became the Minnesota Vikings, they had the four great linemen by the name of Alan Page, Carl Eller, Gary Larson, and I can't remember the fourth guy, but three of them were black guys, and one guy was white. Kind of like the Rams. The Rams, fearsome foursome, they had three black guys, one white guy. Well, anyway, the Vikings eventually called that the Purple People Eaters was the name of their defense because they had the purple uniforms. But these four defensive linemen, they wanted to call them the Four Norsemen instead of the Four Horsemen.
Yeah.
But somebody said, wait a minute, three of these guys are black, and that would be just...
Yeah, that'd be insulting to me, man, to call me a Norseman. I don't even know what that is.
From Norway, a Norseman.
Oh.
You'd probably be proud of that.
I don't care.
I'm sorry I even brought it up. The Vikings would eventually move on to Greenland and Newfoundland.
And Minnesota.
You could get out of here and I'll do it. Greenland and Newfoundland, where matching mouse bones were found. Oh, so they found matching mouse bones, along with matching jackets and slacks. According to the New Scientist, the mice died out in Newfoundland and Greenland, along with their Norse cohabitants. Yet in Iceland, the mice still thrive. Yet the mice still thrive. Like the Vikings, their presence was fleeting, said Jeremy Searle, co-author and professor of Cornell University's bing. That's it, man.
So I was right, man.
What was you right about?
The mice, I don't know.
You like that story, though, didn't you, Robert?
Yeah, I thought kind of interesting.
Well, I mean, I knew basically that's how they do that now, man. They'd look at the DNA. This was not very well written, but basically they could see how far back these mice, and yeah, they came with the Vikings, and it's the same kind of mice. What they basically found is the damn mice are the same kind of mice they've gotten in the what do you call it, Scandinavia, you know?
What do you mean?
In other words, the mice that they found in Iceland and Greenland and Newfoundland is the same kind of mice that they got over wherever the hell the Vikings are from, Norway, Finland, Sweden, that jazz. Where the hell are the Vikings from, anyway?
I thought... You said Minnesota.
Well, you quit screwing around.
I don't know.
You're telling me they're from Minnesota? From Norway, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
You don't know where the Vikings are from, huh?
He's such an idiot. He'd think they is from Minnesota. But an idiot.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The Vikings are from... It's a bunch of guys that lived 1,000 years ago, man. They're from Norway. That's why they called them that. That's why the Minnesota Vikings took that name, because they're up there in the snow, and there's a whole bunch of Swedes and Norwegians up there, and they called them the Vikings, so the football fans up there would feel all warm and fuzzy and feel good about seeing a bunch of black guys. I mean, a bunch of guys in Viking helmets coming out onto the field and kicking ass. All right, we'll be right back here at the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It is our news and information hour. We got more news on this shooter in Afghanistan. This guy, apparently now his lawyer says he's had a memory loss. Yeah, sure. Very convenient. And more on John Carter, which is a movie, which is losing $200 million, which we didn't even know it existed like a month ago. And that's why it's losing $200 million. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show.
Well, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What are you doing anyway?
I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm trying to get my password for Skype.
Yeah, let me do that, man.
Don't do that. Don't screw it up, man. I just changed it. You know, passwords. Do you love passwords? Turn that fan off, will you?
Yeah, Dan didn't say to turn it off.
Dan forgot to tell me to turn it off. Dan doesn't have to say to turn it off all the time. I can turn it off.
Yeah, but I always wait for him to say something.
Yeah, that's why you're there and I'm here, man. I just turned it off. All I'm trying to do is enter a password. I got so many passwords. We all have so many passwords for so many different things that we do that we... Look at this. I just reset my password, and now it says that my password failed.
Man, you're messing up, man. You're messing up too much. They're going to kick you right off of Skype.
What do you mean if I mess it up? I just... What do you mean if I mess it up too much, they're going to kick me off of Skype? Look at this. Can you believe this? You know, you people at these companies, I'm telling you. Anyway, so that's what happened. I forgot my password.
Well, how many different passwords has you got? Did you got a billion of them or something?
I got a billion of them, yeah. And the reason why I got a billion of them is ordinarily... I'm able to remember my passwords. I got a very good memory. People used to marvel at the fact, back before the cell phone became our address book and our day planner and everything, just your phone. People used to marvel. They'd say, "Don't you have a phone book?" I said, "No, I know everybody's." I knew everybody's phone number by heart. All of my friends, I knew their phone numbers. And I also knew the phone numbers of where I worked, the main business contacts of where I worked. I ran out. My memory could store probably about 20 phone numbers.
Man, you're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding you. And let me see if this works again. So I would do that. And so, I would do that. And people would marvel at that. So as a result, when the new day and age of the password came to be, where you needed passwords for everything, ordinarily I don't write them down because I don't need to. I have a system when it comes to passwords. But this, for whatever reason, this damn... Let's see here. This damn Skype, man, and the way they have you logging into this stuff...
Hey, man, you ever do you ever do a thing like where you have a password for being on different newspapers and stuff?
Yeah, like in the comment section.
No, man, I don't do that. I mean, occasionally, I think I've got passwords to comment, like the Daily Mail. For some reason, the Daily Mail, something I saw in there pissed me off one time, so I wanted to, you know, I wanted to get in there and figure that one out. Then I got a password for MSNBC, I think, once, because they pissed me off. I really don't, because, quite frankly, I got a radio show. Why the hell am I feel like I need to comment in newspapers, you know, and things like that, I don't know. I've got a radio show. I can say whatever the hell I want.
There's probably more people reading the newspaper listening to the show.
Well, that could be, for all I know. I have no idea who's listening to this show. I mean, I do, but I don't. But I do, but I don't. But I do, but I don't.
Let's find out.
I don't know. What do you want me to do, man? If I call anybody up and start asking them numbers like that, they might get paranoid. They might think I'm trying to, you know, sabotage the company or something. I better not get too weird. All right, so while we try to figure out Skype, because Johnny Bean and I are going to communicate via Skype, and he's probably out there just shaking his head and going, "God, you are dumb, Hendry. Oh, baby, are you dumb?"
Yeah, I told you like 2 days ago to get it, man.
Yeah, you had one of the segments was shut off tonight, too.
I know that. See, what we have here, folks, if I haven't explained it, I think I have. We have an audio feed to our video cast that sometimes gets shut off for business reasons. And once again tonight, I forgot to turn it back on after one segment. And so that's when I said, okay, where is Skype? And I had to remember all the passwords, and I forgot the password. I'm starting to get on there. And meanwhile, Bean's out there thinking, oh, this guy's...
Johnny Bean live in Bay Area?
Yeah, he does. Why?
That's where Oakland Athletics is. And they had a guy up there named Billy Bean, ran an Oakland Athletic. Probably every guy up there named Bean.
Yeah, what's that about anyway?
Every guy up there is named Bean. Is that what you guys just said to me?
Yeah, Billy Bean and Johnny Bean.
Okay, so there was a Billy Bean and a Johnny. No, they're not related. Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, I think that would make sense.
They ain't related. As far as I know, he would have mentioned something about it. Hey, Johnny, you related to the Billy Bean that turned around the Oakland A's? Okay, thank you.
You didn't hear what he said.
I think he said no. Disney says John Carter is going to lose $200 million, putting it among the biggest flops ever. No wonder it's a flop. Like I said a month ago, we never even heard of this movie. How can you spend that much money on a movie, and then it comes out, and everybody's saying the same thing? What is that, John Carter? Is that guy running for... I thought it was the guy who was running for president.
You kidding me, man?
No, I'm not kidding you. How the hell was I supposed to... Does that look like a movie name to you? You're driving down a road, and you see this thing, John Carter. I said, what the hell is that guy? And the billboards were placed in such a manner so as to suggest that it was either a new news anchor on one of the local TV stations or a guy that was running for the L.A. County Board of Supervisors. I don't have no idea who the guy was. John Carter, that's all I saw. So you will excuse people for not being too surprised then If you get the news, no, it wasn't that. It was a movie, and it's losing $200 million. Well, I don't, you know, it's not a shocker to me, man, because I never even heard of the damn thing. And when I did finally hear about it, I didn't even know it was a movie. That's how lousy your advertising for the thing was. The Walt Disney Company said today it expects to book a loss, well, yesterday, of $200 million. Now, this movie, as you know, or maybe you don't know, it was estimated to be worth about $250 million to make it. And then, and here's the part that is just blowing me away, $100 million more was spent on marketing. Now, where the hell was I during all of this, man? You know?
Well, I don't, did they do TV or anything?
Not any TV that I watch. I mean, if they did some television, it must have been, maybe I don't watch enough network TV. The only advertising I saw for John Carter was the, what do you call it, man? It was the, billboards. But I've seen advertising for other movies. I've known that other movies are coming out. I've seen the ads. They place ads on all the cable channels that I watch. So, no, it couldn't have been that. The movie was based on a series of books written by the late Edgar Rice Burroughs, starting with A Princess of Mars in 1912 and ending with John Carter of Mars, published posthumously in 1964. There was plenty of material for sequels and prequels, but they seem highly unlikely now. With a 51% tomato meter rating on movie site Rotten Tomatoes, the film got average reviews through AP movie critic Christy Lemire, calling it massively confusing and deadly dull. You look at the special effects on this thing, man. It looked pretty interesting to me. I don't know. The poor reception was a shock, given Stanton's directing success with movies like Finding Nemo and Wall-E, each of which won an Oscar for Best Animated Feature. Disney said the loss on John Carter will cause its studio to lose $80 million to $100 million for the quarter. Profits from other movies and home video disc sales will be more than wiped out. So there you go, man. One movie can just sink your profits for a quarter.
That's what you talk about, though, when you're saying about the bottom line on stuff.
Well, it's true, but that's a very good point. That's a very good point. If you're going to start to wet your pants, and this is the business model, though. If you're going to wet your pants, look, you took a shot. You took a shot. I say that there's a way you can still save this. Yes, there's DVD, and yes, there's video rentals. You could probably do free screenings. You could do some things that would probably bring the movie back a little bit in terms of the estimation of the public and the critics. But, you know, if you're living and dying on every quarterly profit report, I'm just telling you that you are doing business the old-fashioned way, and this is exactly why the country's in trouble. Disney said the loss on John Carter will cause its studio to lose $120 million for the quarter. So,
three quarters are left.
Yeah, you got the rest of the year to figure it out, Disney. We'll be right back. The world famous Phil Henry Show. Famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. And Roy, you there?
Oh, hi, Phil. How are you?
Good.
Oh, listen, I'm calling just to tell you I'm enjoying your program. I thought it was an interesting conversation you had with the woman about the mini sub.
Have you been in a mini sub? You told Bud you had?
I have. I've been in the mini sub off of Cayman. And
off of Cayman Island.
Off of Cayman Island. And there was a mini sub. I've been in that, and we went to depths well beyond normal depth that you would go if you're a scuba diver, you know.
Right.
We went down, and we saw, you know, the mackerel and snapper, different fish. And but I got a little claustrophobic, and it was a tough ride up from there. You know, it takes a certain mentality, I think, to live in a submarine for any length of time.
When you say you got claustrophobic, what happened?
Oh, I just got claustrophobic. It's a contained space, a very tightly contained space, and there were other people inside. It was a tourist kind of a submarine.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, I got a hold of the lady in front of me.
Well, all right, let's let our audience in, because you told Bud. I know you. Did you grab someone and put a knife to their throat?
I did. And
so it's okay. I mean, it was a long time ago.
Well, it was last summer.
It was last summer. Okay.
And I was on vacation. We were down there. We had the both of my grandkids. And my wife said, well, why don't you take the grandchildren? And I did, because she was going to go into town do some shopping. So I took my grandson and my granddaughter. And we enjoyed the trip down, but when the mini sub, or this, it's not really a mini sub.
No, I know that it can accommodate how many people?
Oh, I think about six people.
Okay, and it's for people, tourists, to take a ride in?
Yes.
All right.
But when we were coming up, I got a little claustrophobic, and I put my arm around the woman in front of me, and I carry a switch knife, and so I...
You carry a switch knife, a switchblade?
Yes, sir, I do, and I put it to her throat and demanded that they take the submarine to the surface, and that's what they were doing anyway.
Why would a man such as yourself carry a switchblade knife?
Well, a force of habit, more than anything else.
But you're a respectable, distinguished man. You built insurance agencies in the Boston area, right, over the years?
That is correct, yeah.
You've got a nice family, you've got a beautiful home and a great wife, and you carry a switchblade.
It's just the force of habit, Phil, and I've been very lucky in my life, but I've been around some punks. And
were you in a gang when you were a kid?
Well, I ran with some kids, yeah.
Was it a gang? Would you call it...
No, not in the sense you have today, no. No.
So all of a sudden you got paranoid because did you think the submarine was going to sink?
Well, you never know. You know, if someone was to ask me at the time it was happening, what's wrong, Roy, as they did, as my grandchildren did, I wouldn't know. All I knew was I wanted the submarine to surface, to go to the surface as fast as I could. And I put the knife to the woman's throat, and I said, you better make this go to the top pretty fast, or else.
Do you think you would have hurt that lady?
Well, yeah, I would have, yes.
If they hadn't gotten the submarine to the surface, they got the submarine to the surface.
Well, they were going to fool around a little bit down there and look at the guy feeding the snapper. And that's why I did what I did, because I knew eventually it would go to the surface, but I couldn't wait. And they were fooling around, and they were giving food to the snapper, and people wanted to take pictures of the deep-sea diver because he had the big bell helmet on, you know.
Uh-huh. And so that you didn't want to wait, huh?
I didn't want to wait while they were fooling around doing that. And so I said, you take me to the surface. You can come back down, and you can fool around with the snapper. And
well, they're not fooling around. The tourists want to see all of that, you know.
Well, I don't know, and I at the time, I didn't care. I said, you get this thing to the surface. And they did, and I was arrested, and I spent about 4 months at Taylor, which was the where I had been, you know, in 2003.
Now, this is a psychiatric center?
No, I guess it is, yeah. But it's a place that I was admitted involuntarily, and then they said that I could go home, and I said, no, I think I'd better stay. And
how long were you there?
I stayed about a month.
And did they put you on medicine?
Well, they had me on medicine in there. When I got out, and I asked the doctor, did I have to keep taking it? He said, yes, I did. But he said, it may be a situation where you can go off it at some point. So I did. I took it on myself. I went off it after about 3 weeks, and that was not good. And I had a mania, a manic episode then. And
can you tell me what happened?
Well,
if it's embarrassing, you don't have to tell me.
It was, I went into the May Company department store in Brockton, and I had a cross. I was holding it above my head, and I was, I think I thought I was John the Baptist or something.
You got some problems, my friend, you know.
Don't I know it?
No, but I mean, you were almost violent with that woman. You're going into what was it?
No, it was a department store.
You went into a department store with a cross? That's delusional, man. It's like you're schizophrenic.
Well, I don't know. Yes, I'm delusional, hallucinating, yes. And so the doctors told me it was a psychotic episode.
Yeah, that's schizophrenia.
Uh-huh.
And you put a knife to a lady's throat, I mean, and you would have used it, you said.
Well, yeah, because I was in the submarine.
Well, you got into the submarine voluntarily.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't make any sense, Bill, when you're going through the episode, you know.
No, I understand. How are the grandkids and your wife?
Everyone's fine. Everyone's fine. And Gary and I are going to be going on vacation again. We're going to go to Greece. You know, we're going to do the cruise that I told you about.
That's a beautiful cruise. Is that the big sailing ship?
Yes, it's going to be the big sailing ship. And we're going to go back and see some of the places that we saw when we were there in the 70s, you know. But we didn't get to take the cruise because of the terrorism that had happened there in Athens Airport.
Yeah.
But we're going to go back and do it this time.
Well, listen, I want you to keep taking your medicine. You're taking that.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't go off that now.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that. And you only do it with the doctor, what he tells you to do.
No, I understand, yeah. Now I understand, but I...
And, I mean, you don't want to have what happened on that submarine in Cayman Islands happen again.
No, I don't. Not especially with the grandkids, you know.
Were they okay?
Well, they were scared, you know, but they said Grandpa's okay now, and...
You don't want to do that, man. Not with the grandkids. By God, you don't want anything to happen to them.
No. I would never let anything happen to them.
But you don't know, man, when you're in that state. See? So, well, it was good talking to you. And did you like the stuff we were talking about?
Well, that's why I called you. I liked it until you started bringing up James Cameron and a submarine. You know, and then I just couldn't stand it any longer. And I agree with what Ms. Gray said. I think he's a big, grandstanding, hot-dogging, ego-tripping fool. And there's a part of me that hopes when the sub gets deep enough, the pressure just crushes the hull. And all you see on the surface is an oil slick and maybe his hat. But there are things...
Okay,
Did you mean to disconnect him?
Yes, I did. I know when to just cut it off because I would never get...
What did you do that for?
Because I know when to cut it off. I'd never get off the phone with him.
Yeah, but you didn't hang up?
Bud, he was talking about wanting to see James Cameron's submarine crushed and just an oil slick and Cameron's hat on the surface of the water. So that's when I knew just to get out of here. Okay?
You might trip him off, though, to another psychotic episode.
Yeah.
Oh, will you get it? Thank you, Dr. Kildare. Get out of here.
Who's he?
Some bad cultural reference. All right, we'll take a break here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, our news and information hour.
Who's he?
God.
I don't know who Kildare is.
All right, man, we're going to close things out with some more news for yous, baby. Women have nothing to fear from her husband, says Rick Santorum's wife. This ought to be good, man. We'll talk about that when we come back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show this Monday night. So, what did you... You guys are talking about submarines and the you know, that poor guy... That poor guy, Roy, that calls, I don't know what his problem is, you know, but he's obviously, he doesn't like going underwater, you know.
Yeah, but nobody's going to want to go underwater.
Yeah, but it's not going to make you take a knife out and hold it to somebody's throat and say, get me to the surface, you know.
I don't know how nobody would be in a submarine, though, man. I just don't know how nobody would do that.
Well, it's a really, I don't know what you call it, an acquired taste or something like that. It's so, yeah, it's real different. Those submarines, and I was talking to Dan about it. You know that an American nuclear sub, what the weaponry that an American nuclear sub has, one nuclear sub that the United States Navy has could probably take out 5-6 cities.
You're kidding.
No way. I ain't kidding at all. And that's really, that's an interesting little bit of I don't know, the military chess match that goes on all over the globe as we speak, right now, right? We think that the only hot spots are Afghanistan and Iran. We think that the only real war happening right now, and there's some skirmishes here, and there's a little thing going on in South America there, and no. Man, it's happening all over the world, and it's happening between the United States and Russia and China, and a lot of it has to do with subs.
What are they doing?
Oh, they're playing cat and mouse. You know, they're playing tag. They're chasing each other out of each other's waters. I bet you that there isn't a week that goes by. I'll bet you money. There's no way I could prove this, but it stands to reason there isn't a week that goes by that we don't have one of our subs chased away from mainland China or chased away from Russian waters. And the same thing is true with us, that we're running the Russians out of here or the Chinese out of here. You know,
well, what do they do?
Well, we just, you know, we find them on sonar and we, you know, we let them know that we know they're there and they get their ass out of there because they're not going to start anything. The idea is to do what you need to do without anybody seeing you.
What are they doing?
Well, who knows, man? They're along the coast, seeing if they can pick up any radio signals, seeing what they can pick up on radar, seeing what they can get through Wi-Fi. Maybe they can even tune in our radio show. Maybe they missed the Phil Henry show there in China, you know.
Yeah, they're probably right now the Chinese submarine listening to our show.
Yeah. Say hello there to all the guys on the Chungking 5. How you guys doing? No, I mean, that's what's going on. And it isn't just the U.S. and Russia and China. Then there's NATO. And you have all the NATO countries. And you have the Norwegians and the Finns and the French and the Germans. And they're fooling around chasing submarines from here and there.
I thought the Russians was like our ally now.
Let me tell you something, man. Russians are not our allies. The Russians have a different form of government now. They're not communists. But the game is still the same. And the game is, and the Russians are hell-bent on this. They're not going to get muscled out of the world market like they were when they were a communist state. They got their ass kicked six ways to sunset when it came to the economics of the world. They were getting their ass handed to them. And they're not going to let that happen anymore. You know, so the game now is to get their piece of the action. There's a lot of money to be made, and you know, it's one big happy corporation now, like they used to say. But they're not allies the way NATO is, and China damn sure isn't. And you know, North Korea.
But North Korea got any subs?
I don't know if North Korea has submarines or not. They probably have maybe one or two. I don't know. I know that Canada, for instance, has two, and I think they're both diesel. They're not nuclear. So, you know, the nuclear force in submarines really belongs to China, the United States, and Russia, and maybe to some extent a couple of the European countries. But the point I'm making, you guys, is all around the world right now, right this very moment, is the brinksmanship of war and countries pushing and backing off and pushing and backing off. It's happening as we speak. And if you don't think that we're violating the territorial waters of another country, of course we are, and they're doing the same thing, and that's what... The game is not to get caught, because then all these simple-minded bastards start saying, oh my goodness gracious, we were violating their international waters! Oh, we do it every day. They do it to us. One of the things that 9/11 brought forward was the fact, not the fantasy, not the hope, not the desire, not the horrible dream or the horrible night, was the fact that all kinds of rules and laws are being broken every day that we are on this earth, you know, and it has to do with the security of this country, America. And it's stupid to think that you're going to have a nation the size of this one and not have to get into, you know, get into the dirt with some of these guys. So, and the submarines, those are the ones that do it, those guys.
You talk about a nuclear submarine will blow up all them other countries, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know, but it seems to me that if we had a nuclear war, and that's a big if, and it's more remote, the more I think about it and the more the world has changed, I don't know. But in any event, if we had a nuclear war, one of the major weapons would be a nuclear submarines. But anyway, so that's the story, Morning Glory, and that's all I got for you on that one.
Still, I wouldn't be there, but they'd say they ate really good, too.
Yeah, submarine guys eat good. You know, they eat steaks and eggs and all that crap, but who knows? I don't know. All right. Rick Santorum's wife is a nice lady, I guess. People like her, and I'm sure that she never stole a freight train, in the words of the great and late Neil Rogers. I'm sure she's just all that in a bag of pork rinds. But her husband is Rick Santorum. He's running for president. And some people seem to think that he's a douchebag. Now, I'm not necessarily one of them, although I wouldn't vote for the guy if he was gold-plated. But that's just politics. I'm not saying that he's a bad man, per se. A lot of people, well, let's just say a few people, most of them women, are worried that a Rick Santorum presidency would mean hell for women. That the rights of women would be stripped from them. And those rights include, of course, the right to an abortion. So his wife, and I'm trying to find the story now because this one here just got double printed, man. His wife came out and made some comments today to the effect that, don't worry about it, my husband's a great guy, and he's not going to hurt you, and he's not going to screw with you, or he won't screw, I didn't mean to say that, but he's not going to, you know, he's a pro-female, and I know because I'm married to him. Now, here is the latest, by the way, on the primaries. You got Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum waiting for the Illinois primary vote, waiting for the outcome. It is hardly assured Mitt Romney is betting his message of economic proficiency will resonate with Republican voters more than Rick Santorum's sharply honed conservatism. See, that's why I think Santorum's going to lose. It isn't really so much that he has the conservative views that he's got. It's that they are not that as important to the American people as the conservatives think they are. Both men were competing for the 54 delegates at stake Tuesday in Illinois. They were looking to score victory in a state that was not only home to President Barack Obama. How old is this story? Well, today is the 20th, so today is the primary. A state that is home to Barack Obama, but is also one of the major battlegrounds before a three-week lull in April. Romney's confidence was on display Monday, while Santorum was forced on the defensive for first declaring that the economy was not a top issue in the campaign, and then stating that the campaign doesn't hinge on unemployment rates. This guy's going to lose because he's not too bright. By day's end, Santorum had conceded that the economy and unemployment were important, but said they were symptoms of what he described as broader ills, government intrusion, and eroding freedom. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Hendry. Join us online at philhendryshow.com for our live-streaming video, which is, of course, available, well, every show, Monday through Friday, at philhendryshow.com. We'll see you guys tonight. Have a very pleasant tomorrow.
Phil Hendry.